How do we keep track of our amortization reserves? Well, it's easier than you might think. The first step involves recording deposits in your checking account. Normally, when you make a deposit, you add that amount to the balance as recorded in your checkbook register. For example, if your checkbook balance is $100 and you deposit $1,200, you add the two together, reaching a total of $1,300 in available funds. This we refer to as the active account portion of your checking account. The next step is to transfer money from the active account to what we call the amortization reserve account. The money's not really moved to another account, it's just recorded differently. The amount of the transfer is deducted from your check register just like you were writing a check. For example, if you have $1,300 in the active account and you want to put $200 into the amortization reserve, you subtract $200 from the $1,300, leaving $1,100 available in the active account. But instead of recording a check number adjacent to the $200 withdrawal, you just place an R in the check number space. So you'll know that means reserve. You can record the amount you transfer from your reserve account in the back of the check register on a separate accounting system. Record the date of the reserve account deposit and then distribute the deposit among the various amortized categories. Arrange the categories in columns so you can easily keep a running total for each one. I hope you're understanding what this means, and it's a little harder when you're just listening, but what I'd love to do is have you contact us, come and join with us at our retreats, mentoring you through our mentoring program. And we could do this with you and walk with you every step of the way, helping you go from perhaps debt to financial freedom. Let's talk about living within your income versus living within your budget. Families who live within their income are usually able to pay all the monthly bills, but they have nothing left for amortization reserves or savings. In most of these families, the amount needed to get through the month increases at about the same rate their income increases. Often these families look back 10 or 15 years later and marvel how they used to get by on so little. I used to bring home $1,500 a month and we still had a few dollars left over to play around with. Now both of us are working, we're bringing home over $4,000 a month, and we have to charge a pizza dinner, is what you often hear. In contrast, families who live within their budget keep monthly expenditures relatively constant as their income increases. So that's a key. Then they have money for amortization reserves and savings, and the amount of money left over at the end of the month gradually increases as their income increases. Such a surplus is possible because these families have determined what is sufficient for them to live on. They've already determined what is enough house, car, and vacation. Even if they might qualify for more, they know their values and they're satisfied with what they have. Should some aspect of their lives become unsatisfactory, they choose by budgeting how much to spend rather than just spending to the limit of their resources. For example, if family members outgrow a house, they can either add to the existing home or buy a new one. Their decision will be based on how much they feel they need to spend. How much new house will be enough to satisfy their values, not on how much they could spend, determined by the size of the loan they could qualify for with their current income. In other words, they make a budgeting choice of how much they want to spend rather than letting the bank tell them how much they can borrow and then spending all of it. It's just not wise. To become a family that lives within its budget, you must first learn how to cut expenses, distinguish between needs and wants, and incorporate into your budget the financial obligations associated with the past and the future. The time to cut expenses is before you start spending. The moment you make the decision not to spend, or at least not to spend as much as you had planned, you've started the process of cutting expenses. This happens, for example, when you decide to limit the purchase price of a new car to $10,000 instead of $15,000. It happens when you decide to repair rather than replace. It also begins when you borrow something from a friend or a neighbor instead of buying it new, or when you cut costs by being creative. You know, sharing can be an effective means of reducing your spending. For example, neighbors on one cul-de-sac went in together to purchase a snowblower. Friends and relatives sometimes go in on the purchase of a cabin or a boat. Although such arrangements are not without drawbacks, in most cases, cooperation and imagination can solve the logistical problems. Whatever the stresses of sharing might be, they seldom compare to the stresses of heavy indebtedness.